Hello, this is Miss Dell with the Decatur Herald and Review, dated Monday, March 16th, 2026. We will begin today's recording on the front page with the article headlined "Trump Appeal Brings No Promises." He hopes other nations send warships to protect the Strait of Hormuz. Cairo, U.S. President Donald Trump appealed to China, France, Japan, South Korea, Britain, and others to send warships to keep the Strait of Hormuz open and safe, brought no commitments on Sunday as oil prices soar during the Iran war. U.S. Energy Secretary Chris Wright told NBC he was in dialogue with some of the countries and expected China will be a constructive partner in reopening the strait through which one-fifth of global oil exports normally pass. Iran's Foreign Minister Abbas Araghchi told CBS that Tehran was approached by a number of countries seeking safe passage for their vessels, and this is up to our military to decide. He said a group of vessels from different countries was allowed to pass without providing details. Iran said the strait is open to all except the United States and its allies. We don't see any reason why we should talk with Americans about finding a way to end the war, Araghchi added, noting Israel and the U.S. started the fighting with coordinated attacks on February 28th during indirect U.S.-Iran talks. The talks focused on Iran's nuclear program, and Araghchi said Tehran had no plan to recover enriched uranium that is under rubble following U.S. and Israeli attacks last year. We are intensely looking with our allies at what can be done because it is so important that we get the strait reopened, UK Energy Secretary Ed Miliband told Sky News, adding that ending the war is the best and surest way to do it. South Korea's foreign ministry said it noted Trump's call and will closely coordinate and carefully review the situation with the U.S. Expectations are high that Trump will ask Japan directly when Prime Minister Sani Takaichi meets with him Thursday at the White House. A spokesperson for China's embassy to the U.S., Li Pengyu, said all parties have the responsibility to ensure stable and unimpeded energy supply and that China would strengthen communication with relevant parties for de-escalation. France previously said it was working with countries in Europe, India, and Asia on a possible international mission to escort ships through the strait, but stressed it must be when the circumstances permit, when fighting subsides. Meanwhile, energy oil stocks will soon start flowing to global markets, the International Energy Agency said Sunday, describing the collective action to lower prices by far the largest ever. It updated last week's announcement of 400 million barrels to nearly 412 million. Asian member countries plan to release stocks immediately, and reserves from Europe and the Americas will be released from the end of March. Gulf Arab states reported new missile and drone attacks a day after Iran called for the evacuation of three major airports in the United Arab Emirates, the first time it threatened a neighboring country's non-USA assets. Bahrain, Saudi Arabia, and the UAE said they worked to intercept projectiles. Iran accused the U.S. of launching Friday's strikes on Karg Island, home to Iran's primary oil terminal, from the UAE without providing evidence. U.S. Central Command said it had no response to Iran's claim, and Anwar Gargash, a diplomatic advisor to the UAE president, rejected it. Gulf countries that host U.S. bases denied allowing their land or airspace to be used for military operations against Iran. Iran threatened to attack the region's U.S.-linked oil, economic, and energy infrastructures if the Islamic Republic's oil infrastructure is hit. The Islamic Republic fired hundreds of missiles and drones at the UAE, Bahrain, Saudi Arabia, Qatar, and Oman during the war, causing significant damage and rattling economies even as most were intercepted. Tehran said it targets U.S. assets even as Iranian strikes are reported at civilian sites such as airports and oil fields. Iranian strikes killed at least a dozen civilians in Gulf countries, most of them migrant workers. In Iran, the International Committee for the Red Cross said more than 1,300 people were killed. Iran's health ministry said 223 women and 202 children were among the dead, according to Mizan, the judiciary's official news agency. Iran's government on Sunday showed journalist buildings damaged by strikes in Tehran on Friday. A police station was hit and surrounding buildings were damaged. Some apartments' outer walls were stripped away. "God had mercy on all of us," said Elham Movagahari, a resident. In Israel, 12 people were killed by Iranian missile fire and more injured, including 3 Sunday. At least 13 U.S. military members were killed, 6 in a plane crash in Iraq last week. At least 820 people were killed in Lebanon, according to its health ministry, since Iran-backed Hezbollah started hitting Israel, and Israel responded with strikes and sent additional troops to southern Lebanon. In just 10 days, more than 800,000 people were displaced. In Beirut, displaced families fixed tents battered by wind and rain. Fadi Yunus, displaced from the southern suburbs, said his mattresses and blankets were soaked. "We don't know where this will end," he said. In southern suburb of Haret Harik, there was scarcely a person in sight when crews arrived to clear streets of rubble. Israel said it continued to strike Iran, and Iran fired missiles towards Israel. Several strikes hit central Israel and the Tel Aviv area, where they caused damage to 23 sites and sparked a small fire. Megan David Adom, Israel's rescue service, released video showing a large crater in a street and shrapnel damage to an apartment building. Our next article, also on page 1, Giant Passion, new owners have big plans for American Giants Museum. Route 66, Roadside Americana, Atlanta, Illinois. The American Giants Museum has new owners, and with them come plans to expand the collection and keep the spirit of Roadside Americana alive along Route 66. "Our passion for them just kept growing, and eventually we bought a building so we could be part of it," said Lee Woods, owner of the American Giants Museum, 100 Southwest Arch Street. "Now we'll probably spend about 4 months of the year and the rest back home with our kids." He and his wife, Diane Woods, recently purchased the property from the Atlanta Betterment Fund and will be working with museum founder and giant collector Joel Baker on plans to expand the collection. Baker is known for his advocacy in the identification, preservation, and restoration of the giant fiberglass statues, also known as muffler men, that were produced by International Fiberglass Company in the 1960s. The museum is currently closed until a planned official reopening in May, but tours can still be arranged by calling 217-650-7117. "The purchase of the museum came about unexpectedly," Wood said, after he had already purchased the building at 107 Southwest Arch Street, adjacent to the town's hot dog wielding Paul Bunyan giant. Woods planned to bring additional giants to the museum and rotate statues between this location and another collection he maintains in Hot Springs, Arkansas, alongside his towing company. We have another place in Arkansas that has relatively the same stuff, Wood said. We're going to rotate things in and out so everything stays new and fresh and people want to come back to see what's new. Among the upcoming additions to the museum are two large fiberglass figures, Chief Big Brave, a National American-themed giant, and another inspired by the Gemini giant, a classic space-themed figure from the 1960s in Wilmington. Woods also plans to get another Big Boy statue, which is 13 feet tall and believed to be one of about 13 made. His interest in roadside memorabilia started with collecting vintage signs and gas pumps, but that quickly changed when he first encountered one of the towering roadside giants. From there, the hobby quickly grew. I've told people numerous times, I feel like I was born in the wrong era, Woods said. I love the 50s and 60s. Wood said he hopes visitors will leave with a better understanding of the history and perhaps a sense of nostalgia for a simpler time. You had drive-in theaters, diners, people cruising around and socializing, Wood said. It's to remember these giants, but also remember Route 66. Our last article from the front page, officials push back on Trump election threats. Springfield. Illinois election officials and community leaders say they are confident the state is mostly insulated from the Trump administration's aggressive moves and heated rhetoric on election administration as Illinois' March 17th primary approaches. Republican county clerks cautioned, however, that while they weren't fazed by President Donald Trump's messaging or proposed changes to voting laws, they are concerned about how federal cuts to cybersecurity initiatives could affect future elections in the state. Last month, Trump suggested Republicans should nationalize elections and take over voting in select unspecified places despite the Constitution's express delegation of election administration to the states. In January, the FBI seized hundreds of boxes of 2020 election ballots in Georgia's Fulton County, and more recently issued a subpoena to Arizona for its voting results. After Trump repeatedly debunked claims of widespread voter fraud in those swing states, the Trump administration also made major cuts last year to the cybersecurity agency responsible for bolstering state election security. Critics warn these moves are a signal the administration may look to expand its use of aggressive tactics to counter potential Republican losses in the midterms. But many Illinois election officials pushed back on the notion of a looming federal intervention or a fundamental rupture between local and federal officials. There is a lot of talk, said Sangamon County Clerk Don Gray, a Republican, but until I see the federal government take concrete action, there's no sense in stirring up people's fears or cynicism. Feds at polling places. Some in Trump's orbit have often stoked fears of federal immigration authorities being deployed to polling locations. A worry DuPage County Clerk Jean Kaczmarek sought to address in the president's conference last week. It is a federal crime for the military or federal agents to interfere in elections or intimidate voters, she said. Those crimes will not be tolerated in DuPage County. In an interview, Kaczmarek, a Democrat, said she was only addressing concerns that were already circulating. I did not do anything to start the fear, she said. The fear was already there. On Tuesday, the Democratic National Committee sued the Trump administration to compel a response to whether the government was planning to deploy agents or troops to the polls. The Department of Homeland Security has denied that its Immigration and Customs Enforcement agencies would be dispatched to polling places around the country in the midterms. Late last month, the FBI led a call with state election officials from across the county, including Illinois, to discuss the upcoming election. During the call, federal officials reportedly tried to assuage concerns of the prospect of a federal presence at voting locations. Some participants in the call asked about potential federal presence and increased involvement in the 2026 elections. Matt Dietrich, spokesman for the Illinois State Board of Elections, told Capital News Illinois the response from the participating agencies indicated no such plans. Gray, the Sangamon County clerk, said election officials should be careful making public projections about election interference without evidence of concrete action to back them up. He argued such talk can undermine public trust in elections and noted he had received no indication federal officials were planning any sort of election intervention. We need to see definitive action before getting people riled up, he said. Shuttered cyber programs. Another element of the shifting relationship between local elections officials and the federal government is the cuts to federal programs designed to bolster election cybersecurity of states. Over the past year, the Trump administration has inflicted deep cuts to the Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency, the federal entity charged with providing cybersecurity support to the states, among other missions. While states are responsible for running elections, the federal government has long lent its cyber capabilities to help secure them. The cuts have targeted CISA's workforce and led to a significant drawdown of its election security activities, according to the think tank Brennan Center for Justice at New York University. A survey carried out last year by the Brennan Center found that more than 60% of local election officials nationwide were concerned about cuts to the agency. Because Illinois conducts elections on paper ballots, the actual vote tabulations in the state remain immune from hacking, according to multiple county clerks interviewed by CNI. But the Trump administration's gutting of programs focused on combating foreign disinformation could lead to real-world effects in the state. We are under constant attack from foreign agitators, said Tazewell County's clerk John Ackerman, a Republican. We know from information we've already collected in previous years from the feds that China, Iran, Russia are foreign adversaries. They've all attacked little bitty Tazewell. Dietrich said Illinois is uniquely insulated from federal cybersecurity cuts because of the state's massive buildup of its cyber capabilities after the 2016 hacking of its voter database. The Justice Department accused Russian intelligence of the breach, while exposed information on millions of registered Illinois voters, according to the department report. In the wake of the hack, the state established the Cyber Navigator program to better protect its election system from compromise. The program, which is now fully state-funded, embeds one employee at Illinois' statewide Terrorism and Intelligence Center to monitor potential threats to elections, including misinformation and disinformation, Dietrich said. Ackerman expected there to be some gaps due to the federal rollbacks, but he said they wouldn't impact day-to-day operations in his county. He added that while he wasn't concerned by Trump's other moves regarding elections, he said he's noticed the federal government is sharing less confidential information about election threats, a development he's less sanguine about. We've insulated and protected ourselves in previous years with the help of the federal government, he said. That's the aspect that I'm nervous about. It isn't as though as it has been in the past. Sorry, that was thorough, not though. Save America Act. On another front, in a post on his social media site Sunday, Trump said He will refuse to sign any new legislation until Congress passes the Save America Act. He reiterated the demand Monday at the retreat for Republican congressmen in Florida, saying the bill should be the GOP's number one priority before the midterms. The proposed bill would require individuals to prove U.S. citizenship when registering to vote and require a photo identification to vote in federal elections. Opponents of the measure say these requirements are erroneous enough to disenfranchise millions of eligible voters in Illinois. This would create another barrier to the ballot box, said Becky Simon, president of the Illinois League of Women Voters. People do not need more barriers to the ballot box. People need to be encouraged to vote. The bill would place the new demands on Illinois voters to solve an issue that data shows is not prevalent, as non-citizens are already barred from voting in federal elections. A 2024 audit of voter rolls in Georgia, a state long accused by Trump of widespread non-citizen voting, found only 20 non-citizens were illegally registered to vote out of 8.2 million registered voters. Out of those 20, only 9 had voted illegally in previous elections. Still, these legislative changes would take time to go into effect, even if they made it through Congress and are signed into law. We expect the primary elections will unfold uneventfully, Simon said. The clerks that we've talked to are looking at this almost practice for November when they see the real changes coming. Reese Dower is a graduate student in journalism with Northwestern University's Medill School of Journalism, Media and Integrated Marketing Communications, and as a fellow in its Medill, Illinois News Bureau, working in partnership with Capital News Illinois. Capital News Illinois is a nonprofit, nonpartisan news service that distributes state government coverage to hundreds of news outlets statewide. It is funded primarily by the Illinois Press Foundation and the Robert R. McCormick Foundation. Our next article, Damaged Iranian Cultural Sites Raise Alarm. United Nations, U.S. and Israeli strikes on Iran damaged at least 4 cultural and historical sites, including places and an ancient palaces and an ancient mosque, raising alarms about the effects of the widening war on protected landmarks that are important to the Iranian identification and world history. The speed and extent of the damage so concerned Iran and Lebanon, they sent a request to the United Nations Cultural Agency, UNESCO, this week to add more sites to its enhanced protection list. UNESCO confirmed it verified damage to the lavish Qajar-era Golestan Palace in Tehran, as well as the 17th-century Shalal Sotam Palace and the Masjid-e-Jami, the country's oldest Friday mosque, both in Isfahan. There was also a verified damage at buildings close to the Horemabad Valley, which includes 5 prehistoric caves and 1 rock shelter, providing evidence of human occupation dating to 63,000 BC. At Golestan Palace, shattered glass from the mirrored ceilings blanketed the floors alongside broken archways, blown-out windows, and damaged molding scattered below its glass mosaic walls, according to the Associated Press video taken March 3rd. UNESCO said it provided all parties to the conflict with the geographical coordinates of the heritage sites ahead of time to take all feasible precautions to avoid damage. The effects to cultural sites are not isolated to Iran, but felt across the Middle East and beyond, with UNESCO's tracking damage to the White City in Israel, Tyre in Lebanon, and elsewhere. Collateral damage to such palaces was part of the fabric of war for decades, including conflicts between Russia and Ukraine, as well as Israel and Hamas, in which dozens of sites were damaged or destroyed. What is happening is clear to all in these increasingly modern conflicts. It's civilians who pay the price. It's civilian infrastructure that pays the price. And we've all seen the destruction of priceless historical heritage, UN spokesperson Stephanie Dujarric said this week. Our next article. Milliken University eyes $53 million loan. Decatur City Council to weigh Big Blue's request for big bucks. Decatur. Big Blue wants a big $53 million loan, and it's hoping the city of Decatur will float a bond issue to fund it. City councilors will discuss whether they should help out Milliken University at Monday evening's council meeting. The session will include a public hearing so taxpayers can throw in their 2 cents worth before a vote is taken on whether to formally okay the bonds. Decatur families and businesses will not be on the hook, however, for paying the bonds back. That falls to Milliken and Milliken alone. The bonds will not constitute or evidence any debt of the city, the state of Illinois, or any political subdivision thereof, or a loan or credit extended to any of them within the meaning of the Constitution or the statutes of the state of Illinois. States the intense legal boilerplate language setting out the conditions for the bond issue. No holder of the bonds will have the right to compel any exercise of the taxing power of the city, the state of Illinois, or any political subdivision thereof to pay the principal premium, if any, or interest on the bonds. Milliken plans to use the money to retire existing, more expensive debt, and also has an eye on using the cash to fund future expansion, renovation, and remodeling costs for the 124-year-old private school's Decatur campus. Using the city's tax-exempt status, Milliken can secure the bonds for a lower cost, and investors do not pay federal income tax on the interest earned, making the deal more attractive to bond buyers. This is the first issuing of such a bond on behalf of another organization in recent memory, and while the ultimate decision on whether to do so rests on the yes vote of the county councilors, language prepared in advance for an ordinance authorizing the bond says helping Big Blue also helps those off campus too. That the issuance of bonds to accomplish the financing purposes will promote the general health and welfare of the residents of the city and surrounding areas, the ordinance states. The city of Decatur has the power to issue such a bond under the home rule provisions set out under Illinois State Constitution. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the Decatur Herald and Review for March 16th, 2026. Please stay tuned.